Chris.
I'm Ben Leroy.
And I'm Jason Buchholz, and you're listening to Collabercast.
Look at that.
How you doing, Ben?
A little freelance there. A little freestyle.
Off script. We already got stuck in a rut. We're already like an old couple.
Break up the routine.
Going
into business for yourself is what we would call that in the wrestling world. I don't want to turn this into just a two old dudes complaining about the weather podcast, I did want to point out that without knowing what was going to happen, on Saturday it was almost 80 here, and now it is in the low 30s. And this is that whiplash that is absolutely terrible at this time of year in Wisconsin. It's not supposed to get out of the 40s for the foreseeable future. So sucks to be us is what I'm telling you.
Softball back on pause. Trickney.
No, got a game tomorrow night. One of those ones where you can really feel the hands sting a lot when you hit the ball. So
it was
a mark of pride as a youngster. As an old man, I think I'll probably be whining inside every time I swing the bat for a variety of reasons, bad back, legs.
Just hoping the ball doesn't get hit to you.
Yeah. Don't catch it off the wrong part of the glove. How's the California treating you?
It's a nice 70-ish here. A little breezy, but no complaints. It's t-shirt weather. Going to do a little camping this weekend down in Santa Cruz.
A fine spot. If we were running commercials, I would have a commercial right here for the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods, which is in SoCal, which bumps up next to Santa Cruz.
I think we just ran an ad. I think we can send them a bill.
Yeah. Hey, Steve, if you're listening, that's like $1,000 a second. So I want to encourage people to look up the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods as a writing retreat. It is a wonderful place. This is not an ad. And I have dreams of someday in the future being able to give people scholarships to go spend a week or 2 weeks writing in the middle of a redwood forest and being in what I find as a perfect environment. And I know that you've stopped by there, so you're familiar with the property, the grounds, et cetera.
I have. Beautiful spot. Very inspiring, very peaceful.
Yeah. So we'll sometime down the road, get a scholarship going for that. But today, I love the gimmick of speaking of and then going into something entirely not what was just being spoken of, but I just muddled it and then showed the magic trick being done and done poorly. So I'm going to go ahead and probably abandon that ship today.
Let's go with it. Speaking of Redwoods, today we're talking about
publishing. One of the earlier episodes, we were talking about how to evaluate a publishing company, because this is an important part of the process. Once people have had their book edited or have reached that spot on their own and have written their query letters, and now you've either written a query letter directly to a publisher or you have an agent who's out contacting publishers on your behalf, there are definitely some things that you should keep in mind.
Let's do a quick survey of the landscape of the publishing world before we jump into those details.
Okay.
And this is for my own edification, because this is more, you've been much more involved in this side of the industry than I have. So there are the big, and there have been mergers and acquisitions. There's the big small number.
Right.
Currently.
Yeah. And I think some of it's even held up right now by making sure that the Department of Justice is on board with mergers and acquisitions of some sorts. That there are an exceedingly few number of large international multimedia conglomerates that own many of the most well-known publishing companies that have historically been separate entities many of them are now kind of like mushed together into large Frankenstein publishing companies.
Like, for instance, Simon & Schuster, right? Was recently acquired by Penguin, or?
That's the one that I am actually not sure if that has been fully consummated.
Okay.
Or if it's in the process of it. But this is where I have gleefully been able to step away from some of those details of the publishing industry. It's like, I'm hanging out in the metaphorical dive bar and they're kind of the metaphorical country club. And like, maybe someday they'll ask me, hey, can you come over and like paint the walls or something? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I can come back over and do that. So I've got, as we know, the last company that I started, Tyrus Books, ended up being ultimately acquired by Simon & Schuster. And then after like 6 months, Simon & Schuster was like, hey, thanks for all of the books and thanks for giving us your opinion on things, but we don't really have room for you anymore. And so that was how my last tenure as a publisher came to a close. And I remain grateful for the fact that that happened the way it did. I was getting so close to burnout. It had been a lot for many years. And there was something beautiful and triumphant of being able to start a publishing company in a beat up old house on Williamson Street in Madison, Wisconsin, that then ended up being acquired by one of the largest publishing companies. Like, that was satisfying to me. It was
absolutely, it's a phenomenal achievement.
And so it was good to be able to do that. But I'm also, from a working in publishing standpoint, I'm glad to not have that pressure at this moment.
So aside from those big guys, what else? We've got small presses, independent publishers, all kinds of things. What else is going on out there?
We've got a soup of terms that are getting close to meaningless because they have been used and reused and the landscape has changed a lot and new things have popped up that hadn't existed before and there wasn't good coordination between all parties involved as far as what different terms meant. So you could, and I had been a part of conversations where people would be using the same words, but they would be meaning radically different things.
Like the editing services.
Sure. But even like when people talk about a word that I see a lot is indie. And for a long time, independent publisher meant somebody not owned by one of the conglomerates. And then somewhere along the lines, people who were self-publishing quit using the term self-publishing and started saying that they were independently published or that they were independent authors. And so there was this kind of blurring of lines or complete removal of lines. And the same thing happened. No one needs to try to like do the math or hold me accountable to what I'm saying exactly here, but
we're just making stuff up.
I'm just kind of making stuff up. But the idea of what it means to be a small press has also changed in time because, my producer was just making sure that the microphone check was good. Because technology has changed and has created a wonderful opportunity for a lot of people who couldn't previously start publishing companies, they can now start publishing companies. You don't have to do an offset print run of 3,000 copies where you store books in a garage. Computers, everything from Word to Photoshop has made typesetting and designing a book something that anyone can accomplish. And certainly we've seen evidence of anyone trying to accomplish it. So the idea of a small publisher went from somebody who existed and was present in the marketplace to now it can be people who are in their garage who are doing 2 ebooks a year. They're calling themselves small publishers too. The difference is I know small publishing houses that are doing tens of millions of dollars a year in business. And then I know small publishers who are doing tens of dollars a year in business. And so the term small publisher has become meaningless. And so it really has. The problem is because people aren't doing deep dives into the nuances like I'm doing right here, the word just gets thrown around willy-nilly to the idea that, you know, oh, I'm published by a small press. And that is now a term that is sort of meaningless at this point. Like I have to ask around, like, well, what, like, who is your publisher? And one of the phrases that's kind of come into style in the last decade is micro press. And I feel like micro press is a good word to kind of describe the smaller end of the spectrum now. When I was running first Bleak House, then Tyrus, we were getting over $1 million a year in sales. It was my full-time job. It was like how I, it was how I got my paycheck. It was an ongoing concern that was financially sound enough to keep the lights on and to make sure that everyone was getting paid and we were doing what we needed to do to get books out into the world. But I know that I can remember a time when I was reading an interview with somebody who was doing an ebook only company that was only putting out like 5 books a year or something like that. And they were doing an interview and someone was sort of asking who they were and where they were and the things. And they said, oh, we're just like Bleak House Books. And this was back in the olden days when I was running Bleak House, which is the first company I started. And I had a like hard time there. It wasn't my ego being like, you're not like me because I'm doing all these bigger things. It was just, we're putting out information now where people's expectations are going to be completely wild because they don't, if you tell me that you're just like so-and-so, but you're not actually like so-and-so in many measurable metrics, then you're kind of adding to this Tower of Babel where no one can understand what the other person is saying. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just terms that don't really have, there's no agreement on what these terms mean.
Right.
What about imprints?
Imprint is just a division. It's just a, how I've always understood it is, it's just a division of a larger parent company. So that...
And what would the purpose of those be? So as people are looking at different publishers, perhaps different imprints, to what degree do imprints carry the ethos of their parent company and to what degree are they different?
It's important to be able to identify what genre you're working in for a variety of reasons, including... being able to focus your review efforts and your marketing efforts and being familiar to the people who are going to be reviewing books or going to be selling books. And the clearer your identity is for the imprint, the easier it is to market, sell, get coverage for, et cetera. And if you just said company A puts out books that range from memoir to cookbook to children's picture book to mystery novel to romance, it's really hard to kind of focus who you are and what you're doing. And so that's the beauty of the imprint is Accomplice Books does crime and Sweetheart Books does romance. And so you can kind of just build a very specific brand. And it's the same way with record labels. It's the same way with even television networks. Like you have to sort of build specificity into your model so that people know what to expect. And my apologies to people who are watching on YouTube that all of my light tricks over here, I'm a little bit blurry because my camera on my computer is not picking up stuff because there's not as much light as usually when Jason and I are doing this, and it's bugging me. And so I'm like a very distracted 3-year-old trying to find where to put my table lamp to get things fixed.
Literally distracted by shiny things.
Exactly. I believe there's also a squirrel in my backyard, if I'm looking correctly.
If you have to run over to the window and yell at it for a bit, I'll understand. I think you got the lighting figured out now. It's looking looking good.
Okay.
So that all sounds like a good way to talk about what an author should look for in terms of how to select a publisher.
Sure. The first question that I would have that you might not get a completely direct answer to is like, how well capitalized is this company? Is there money to keep things going? Is there money to take advantage of opportunities? Are the bills going to get paid? And that those bills getting paid includes you, the author. Are you getting in advance? What is your royalty rate? A fair warning here, I'm going to be opening up a can of worms and exploring multiple tendrils and then moving to another one. So like specifically talking about royalty rates, one way that people might evaluate a publisher is like, well, what sort of royalties are they paying? And I have seen voice crack there, nothing like the old 46-year-old voice crack. I've seen publishers, I've seen reports of publishers who are paying high royalty rates that are extraordinarily out of line with the sort of norm, the conventional wisdom. And people will get really excited about that. But if your publisher is paying you, say, 50% royalties on the cover price of a book, but they're only able to sell 25 copies, then really the good royalty rate isn't doing you any favors.
Sounds a little bit like the Nigerian prince who was going to give you $50,000.
If you just, can give them. So royalty rates is a big thing to like drill down onto later. We can do that in another episode. We can maybe look in another episode about the book contract. But I would also make sure that the publisher has distribution, especially if they're doing print books. You need to make sure that the books are going to be in stores, in retail outlets, that you aren't solely relying on. Like one thing that people will talk about is like, my book is available to be ordered from barnesandnoble.com or Amazon or bookshop.org, which is the preferred retail outlet for book sales for Calabrese. It doesn't do any good for your book to be available to be ordered if nobody knows that it exists. And if one of the ways, and certainly it's changed, the way people buy books has changed in the last decade or two. But if your book isn't available for people to see, then people won't know it exists. And if they don't know that it exists, they're not going to order it. So the distribution component, and I go back to my time at Bleak House and Tyrus, and then later on, we were distributed to bookstores and retail outlets by a distributor. And what that meant was that there was a whole sales team of people who were familiar with your work, thought about who booksellers were that were going to like really be passionate about like this, a book like this, or could be passionate about a book like this. So then they go to bookstores, they go to trade shows, they go everywhere and they're talking about your books. They're talking about other publishers too, but you're lumped together, but they are actively selling it and they are taking pre-orders and they are getting a buzz going, which is something that a lot of micro presses don't have, because distributors need to know that they're going to be able to make money selling your books, which means that they're going to need to know that you as a publisher are making efforts to sell books, publicity, promotion, et cetera, and that it is worth their time to understand your catalog, to go sell your catalog, et cetera. So distribution is a big thing. Like, are books from this publisher available in bookstores? If you show up, are they available? Likely they're not going to be available nationwide, but are they going to be available somewhere? And it's still a joy to me to be able to go into a Barnes and Noble and see books that I am responsible for publishing on the shelf. And it's now a decade later, and I can go in and be like, oh, cool, they're still stocking this. And like, this is here. And that is my ego talking. Like I said earlier that my ego wasn't talking, but that's definitely my ego talking.
Sure. It's allowed to say things.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does an aspiring author go about finding this out? You could
just straight up ask the people who the potential publisher, like, what is your distribution to the market? And it's really either intentional in some cases or deceptive in others when people say, oh yeah, all of our books are able to be ordered from these outlets. And so that, you know,
you can self-publish a book.
Exactly. And yeah.
I could put a pamphlet online tomorrow that exactly. I write tonight and be able to say the same thing.
Right. And so there isn't that. It's a cool and validating thing to be able to go to an online bookseller, type in your name, type in your ISBN, type in your title, and there's a book. But again, if no one knows that it exists, then that's problematic. So I would just ask a publisher, what sort of distribution do you have? And they could say none. They could say that they are distributed by some of the more prominent independent distributors. There are some. They could be published. I'm sorry, they could be distributed by a larger publishing company. Places like Penguin Random House distribute large independent publishing houses, large by independent standards. So there are a bunch of different options. You hopefully will have a publisher who is distributed to the trade. Part of that, will anyone know that your book exists? You should be able to look to see what sort of reviews a potential publisher is getting. Where are they getting reviews? Are they getting reviews in large daily newspapers? Are they getting reviews in trade publications like Publishers Weekly, Library Journal? Are they getting reviews in places like Entertainment Weekly, People Magazine? Where is attention being given to titles from a particular publisher? And it used to be enough that if you squinted the right way, if someone said like, well, we have a very robust online presence. Well, everybody does now. And everyone is yelling and shouting for attention in the public square online. So that's not really an effective publicity and promotion channel. And, you know, obviously there are some publishers and some people and some brands who do a good job of it. But for the most part, it's not really a winning strategy for getting the word out if that is your only thing, is that you're doing social media. So thinking about where people are finding out about your books is good. And you can do a spot check by just saying, okay, these are the five most recent titles that have been published by this publisher. If I look, am I able to find reviews for these books from places where people actually read the reviews? There are a million bloggers and websites that might not actually get that much traffic who do a lot of reviews. And it's kind of like your book is available to be ordered. If people aren't going to see those reviews, then are they really reviews? And they're great. They're great for self-esteem to see a review from someone you don't know saying, hey, I really like this book. But if end customers aren't seeing those reviews, they're not really selling books very much. Another important thing is, what is the quality of the editing and design team that's working on your book? Because I see a lot of people who pass themselves off as publishers, and the quality, the book quality, is not anywhere near market standard, and no one is grading books on a curve. No one is going to say, well, this doesn't look good at all compared to what Random House is doing, but, you know, we don't have Random House's budget. No one is grading on that curve. They are judging books by the cover, and they are judging by the inside. So make sure that if you get a copy of a printed book that a publisher puts out that you might be flirting with to have a relationship, that it actually looks like a book that you would pick up and buy at Barnes and Noble or an independent bookstore, that this is market ready. That's another big, big red flag, because books that are poorly produced will not get reviewed in major places. They just won't. It'll sort of have an amateurish feel to it. Those places are not looking to promote that kind of stuff. It goes out. Yeah, I guess those are the kinds of things that I would kind of focus on if I was going to be asking questions.
On the editorial side of things, is there a way to... So I had a great experience with Tyrus, with my own book. I don't remember her name, but
Ashley.
Ashley read the manuscript, had some great points, really was, not, you know, it wasn't major revisions, but she definitely was, had read it thoughtfully. I had some inspiration from that, went through, polished a couple of things up. I was really happy with that whole interaction. I just felt extremely lucky in that situation. Is there a way to approach that particular process in a way that doesn't rely so much on just dumb luck and finding yourself in Ashley? Besides, you mentioned reading the books, getting the books, looking at the covers, feeling what they feel like, reading them. Or is that just the way to do it? Just to acquaint yourself with the quality of the work that the publisher puts out?
Yeah. I think it's that. I think it's buy a couple of books and see, like, how does this read? And again, no one is going to be assessing based on a curve. They're not grading on a curve. And in your particular situation, before the book even got to us, to Tyrus, you had already had an agent who had provided feedback and notes, and you had been working with, right? So like you already had this book that was really beautiful and really solid. And then Ashley came in, and this is sort of related to your question, but I also kind of wanted to spotlight this out about this part of the process. You had an agent who gave you feedback, and that agent is a listener of the podcast. So hello to Robin. And
I think we should also insert that not only did she give me feedback, but has been an incredible editor and reader, and has given me incredible feedback over many years on my work. And so, yeah, she absolutely had a major hand in helping me craft that into what I hoped it could be.
And so, then yeah,
she had a big hand in that before it got in front of you and Ashley.
And so that's part of the importance of an agent, is getting things that it's ready to go, and then knowing who to reach out to, and being able to separate the micro presses and making sure that there's alignment between the author's goals and the publisher's capabilities. That's how I should phrase that. And that's really the value, one of the multitude of values and benefits of having an agent, is that they have the familiarity of who's doing what, who's got a certain reputation in the industry, et cetera. But then as an author, you took a book that went from an agent to me that I fell in love with. And then I gave it to Ashley. And like Ashley then had the responsibility of reading, giving you feedback, and then working that together. So just that whole process. It wasn't like you handed a manuscript over to Tyrus and then we were like, oh, okay, just we'll just slap a cover on it and go. It's a long process. And so you do develop an understanding of who's publishing in a particular space and what's considered good and what's considered great. And that's definitely a way of assessing a publisher.
I feel like we should make it clear that you mentioned the long process, but we would not have gotten into that long process had it not been ready. So I don't want to give anybody the impression that, oh, I'll just slop something together because there's going to be an agent and a publisher and an editor who are all going to help me make this into a professional manuscript. And the competitiveness of the industry is such that if you slop something together, it's not going to rise to the top because there's going to be other things that are not slopped together.
Absolutely. And so to kind of put a bow on it, really, an author should be asking what their goals are, how they would define success, and then make sure that the publisher that they end up working with is capable of generating and creating that success. That's kind of a thing that I would say. And there's a lot of, I spend way too much time, absolutely too much time online in different places where people are talking about different publishing companies. And I see a lot of bad behavior. I see a lot of chest beating. I see a lot of veneration of people who are overselling their abilities and their capabilities. I see people who take the opportunity of running a publishing company to engage in bad behavior along a multitude of lines. I hear
publishing, not pro wrestling. I think there was a pro wrestling comment earlier. Is this, am I getting wires crossed here?
Yeah. I'm still on the, I'm both. I'm well-versed in both.
A lot of overlap there.
Yeah, it's always.
What about red flags? That sounds like, you know, what are some red flags that an author should look for?
I hate, and we've talked about this before, I hate the lording over, gatekeeping things. I've definitely come across people who run micro presses who take it as an opportunity to be bullies and to it's like an opportunity to play big shot, but you're not really a big shot. And you can bully people who are aspirational about having their novel published. You can bully people who aren't privy to the inner workings of your business or how the industry works. And I will do my part whenever I see that going on to call people out and to, I've been around the block too many times to just kind of let that go. I know that there's one, there was a horror publisher. I don't know. I don't have any concept of time. It was 10 years ago. It's 15 years ago. It's 7 years ago. I don't know. But this guy was a total bully to one of the authors he published, like making edits to a book that weren't asked for and weren't approved by the author. They just made changes. And she brought it to the author brought it to the attention of the writing community. Like, this guy is running a publishing company poorly. He's been sending me threatening messages because I challenged him. And like, there's this thing where I've seen agents say it. I've seen publishers say it. I've seen writers repeating it, that like, if you say something bad about me, I'm going to tell all of my colleagues in the publishing industry and you're going to be blacklisted forever. That group doesn't exist. there isn't like a retreat that all agents and publishing professionals go to where they compare notes about people who stepped out of line and said bad things. Like if your behavior is egregious, that might make an impression that lasts. But I see people like seriously afraid to get on the bad side of a certain agent or publisher. And there's no cabal that's going to be working against you. Like it's okay that if someone's doing sketchy stuff, then it's okay to call them out for sketchy stuff. You're not going to be ruining your chances for publication by a legitimate publisher later on down the road.
Money. What if someone says that all you need to do is pay them a couple thousand bucks up front and they'll make all your wildest distribution dreams come true?
You got to tell them no. You got to put the Converse to the pavement and get out, because not a thing. You should not be paying a publisher. You should not be paying an agent. For the most part, money should be flowing completely to the author. I can think of, you know, there are new hybrid arrangements that aren't
right.
I don't hybrid have meaning clarity with it.
Right, meaning that they are somewhere in between self-publishing and traditional publishing, in that they may be selective and have an editorial board or some type of review process, but it's still being funded by the author.
Yeah, so that's getting into a gray area that people would have to present me with a contract and a situation, and I would say this is why I wouldn't do this. Or yeah, okay, I get this. If you know what you're about to do, but for the most part, no, you should not be paying for anything. And if you were going to be paying for something, and again, I'm now speculating on stuff that I don't have in front of me, but if you were going to pay for something, then you should be getting a much larger percentage of whatever revenue is generated by the project and not just standard royalties. Because part of why publishers get the percentage of the revenue that they do is because they are fronting the cost for the production, the editing, the design, the printing, et cetera. So like that's all a very legitimate thing. If you are somehow coming out of pocket for that, then you too should be getting part of whatever that publisher share is.
Right. And that's what the hybrid business model is. And that's, there is certainly a time and a place for that. It's a legitimate business model. So
just to be clear, some projects don't have a wide commercial audience. And so they're not going to get $1 million advance for a fairly niche thing. And in that kind of case, I could see where, well, if you want a book to come out and there is a particular marketing plan for how you're going to get this book out and your expectations are in line with actual abilities to produce, then okay, maybe. But I'm not a lawyer. What's coming up on the next episode of the podcast?
I'm going to be interviewing my current agent, Wendy Levinson of Harvey Klinger, talking about a little bit about why she does what she does and giving listeners a glimpse of what goes on from the perspective of an actual agent, not just two old dudes complaining about the weather and speculating.
Good. We need an actual expert to be involved with things.
To share some of that.
I know that we have received a few query letters that have come in from folks who are looking for a query letter review. So what I'm thinking is you interview Wendy for the next episode. The two of you can talk about what she's looking for and we can match it up with the discussions that we've had. And then in 2 weeks, you and I can go through some of those query letters that we've received, and we can, using the benefit of what we learned from Wendy, our own experience, we can go over them and we can kind of give real-time feedback. This is in line with what I've done already on our YouTube channel, but maybe we can do a podcast dedicated to the query letter and doing real life examples. Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me. Thanks to everybody who sent in your query letters. And to those of you who might be considering it, please send them in. If we might not get to them on the particular episode that we're talking about, but we will plan to do this on a continuing basis. It's interesting and informational.
Those and can be sent to.
I was just going to say, we appreciate you sharing your work with us. At collaborus.org.
Man, we went back to the talking over each other bit. That's a good one. All right. Well,
for story,
for community,
collaborist.
All right. Back to the weather.